Hey, HG 101 fans, I want you to know that we're crowdfunding a brand new, gorgeously printed hardcover book covering 101 weird, obscure, historically important, and just plain cool Japanese video games. It's going to be called Hardcore Gaming 101 Presents Japanese Video Game Obscurities, but we can only put it out with your pledge. So check out hardcoregaming101.net. The link should be pretty much close to the top of the page. Japanese Video Game Obscurities. If we get to do this, it's going to be our best looking book yet, and it's one of those books that it'll be about stuff you've probably never heard of. In fact, I can almost guarantee you won't have heard of almost all of it. So give a hoot, fund our book, $15 for the PDF, $20 plus shipping for the hardcover. Do it! Hello and welcome to episode 67 of HardcoreGaming101.net's top 47,858 games of all time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I want to be the very best, like no one ever was. My panelists today are...
I'm Bobinator.
I'm Carl.
I am Sotanga.
And on this podcast, we have three rules. Rule one, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule two, you can nominate one game at a time via five-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. We've stopped accepting iTunes via Twitter for the foreseeable future. Rule three, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but please do not nominate games that have already been ranked. See for yourself which games have been nominated and which games have been ranked by going to bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames. The next game we're talking about is RoboCop versus The Terminator, which was nominated by @SolventImage, I think, on Twitter. It was developed by Virgin Games USA and published by Virgin Games for the Sega Genesis. Earliest release date and territory appears to be May 19th, 1994, and where else? North America.
May I introduce this game real quick?
Yeah, you must introduce this game, because I will not.
So, this was a game based on a... I believe it's like a 1993 Dark Horse comic of the same name. Basically, it turns out RoboCop helped invent Skynet, so a woman goes back in time to try and kill him, and weird and wacky things happen from there.
Okay, it's a Frank Miller production, also.
Does the game have any prostitutes?
If you do, I guess you kill them.
No, you get to rescue some random guys in, like, hazmat suits or something in, like, the early part of the game.
They could be prostitutes. We don't know, right?
Yeah, they could be underneath their outfits. Like, could be moonlighting.
It's a weird fetish, but, I'm sure it's up someone's.
If there's prostitutes and violence, you can bet Frank Miller
there's tons of violence.
Far behind.
This is one of the most violent games available on the system, yes.
Like, short of Mortal Kombat, yeah.
We're looking at the Genesis version specifically, because tighten on that on the SNES, I tell you what. And also, the SNES version just feels a little, like, weird in comparison. It feels more natural at home on the Genesis, because of how grim and gritty it is.
It really cranks up the grad. Yeah, it feels naturally... Hey, this don't let him insult this. You know, this game's terrible.
Oh, boy. Okay,
it's a good concept, but it doesn't really work as a game well.
It's called RoboCop vs. Terminator. Of course it's a good concept. I mean, that's it. That was all it had going for it.
I used to, like, my brother, who's a comic book artist, we used to joke around about, like, oh, we're going to do the ultimate commission, right? It's going to be, like, RoboCop versus Terminator versus Aliens versus Batman versus Snake Plissken versus, like... and we just, like, keep adding stuff to it. And it never got drawn.
There was a RoboCop versus Terminator versus Alien or something, wasn't there?
I think it was, a Batman versus Alien. That was real.
There's a lot of these crossovers.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, basically, I know that Batman fought Predator in that one fan film, Batman Dead End, I think it was called.
Batman vs. Predator makes a lot more sense.
That does,
because I
could
see, they kind of fit together.
Out-stealthing each other,
so,
yeah.
Think about, mind
like,
if I
yeah, go ahead.
Discuss this game real quick? Is that okay?
No. I don't want to discuss this game.
Let him go anyway.
Tell them about the game that they're definitely not going to play.
So it's pretty much like a big run and gun, like, I guess Contra-esque, but worse about every way. It feels really Amiga to me. Like, I bet there was a lot of Amiga talent on this game, because it has some of those vibes to me.
We did like a little bit of digging, and there was a couple of people who'd worked on the Amiga, but plenty of people that were just kind of worked on British games. Unsurprising, because Virgin Games is involved, but I wouldn't really call it a run and gun. I think it's a lot more like an action platformer kind of deal.
I would call it a walk and die. That's what I would call it.
You have Turrican health. Yeah. That's great.
Well, I guess that makes sense for RoboCop, since he's like this big, unmovable piece of metal.
Yeah, but he's like a piece of paper being dipped into water. He doesn't stand a chance.
RoboCop suffers from the same problem as Superman. Granted, on a lesser scale, but, I mean, he shouldn't be viable for most video games because he is a tank on legs, basically. Only something really hard like the Ed 209 or the Cobra Cannon or whatever can strike him down. But in this game, he's able to jump higher than he realistically should, but as a trade-off, he just takes damage from regular street punks, just like, you know, 22 caliber pistols or whatever, and that's just not right.
Well, I mean, he does absorb a lot more damage than the normal human being could absorb. Like, when you shoot somebody in this game, if they're not a robot, they just die and, like, they burst into bloody chunks almost immediately, right?
Especially if you've got some of the bigger weapons, like, the only good weapon in the game, or not good, but interesting, is a, like, weird grenade launcher that once you fire a shot, you control the shot by moving around, and RoboCop moves at the same time. It's very buggy and glitchy and strange, and I think that they just thought it was a cool idea. I'm glad that they thought something was a cool idea.
The only thing I can think of that's like is the fire and homing combination in Gunstar Heroes. I mean, you can only have one projectile on the screen at a time, but you're able to control that. Nothing in Contra really acts like that, but like, that's probably the only really interesting thing.
Yeah, I wish that one was in another game. I really do.
Yeah.
To me, the interesting thing about this game is the crazy story behind it. Does RoboCop versus Terminator predate Alien versus Predator, or is it the second stupid crossover in the stupid wars of the early 90s?
That's a good question.
I'm not a comic expert. I seem to remember the Alien versus Predator concept being pretty old.
Yeah, that was I think, pre-90s, maybe. Almost.
We got a really damn good game out of that one, at least, so...
And, there was a beat-em-up in 94 or 95, wasn't it? Or was that way in 96?
Yeah. I think it was 94, and yeah, that beat-em-up, and then later the first-person shooter that made by Rebellion. So two really good games.
And then there was that really terrible beat-em-up on the SNES.
Yeah, that one was made by some other company.
Means that AVP probably does predate the RoboCop vs. Terminator concept, just based on the timing of the games.
Well, they must have been trying to make like a big media event out of this, because this game was on a whole bunch of platforms, and it was entirely different in almost all of them.
I think because this was, 94 was towards the tail end, but this was still when they were trying to sell concepts like RoboCop and Terminator to kids. This game was not for kids, but it was sold to kids, essentially, as the game goes. You know, it's I don't think anyone, like, adults are like, yes, finally, RoboCop vs. Terminator, the game I was looking for. They weren't even trying to buy games, so that was what they made here. I get really bothered by this game because there's barely any Terminators in it. I think when you get towards the end of the game, you start finding Terminators, but for the first several, like, levels or worlds that the game takes place in, whatever, you know, city, scaffolding, like some sort of industrial factory. You fight like one Terminator during that whole time, which doesn't really seem like, you know, RoboCop versus the Terminator as what I would feel as a game. Mostly it's just RoboCop shooting humans.
Don't you go to like a future Los Angeles at the end? I thought you did.
Yeah, towards the end of the game, which you will probably never see because this game is incredibly hard. It's so hard! And I know games were hard then, but, you know, RoboCop is not a character who should be struggling to defeat perps.
The weird thing about RoboCop is, in making games about RoboCop, is that RoboCop walks really slow, right? That's his big thing.
Yes, but he has a great theme song while he walks.
Yeah, he walks super slow, and then he just, like, commits horrific acts of violence. Yeah. But, like, it's like kind of hard to make a game about RoboCop because you don't want a game where the main character moves super, super slowly. It's really hard to do a game like that. Like, I don't think RoboCop is a good character for games. And the weird thing about this game is that, like, it recognizes how frustrating it is to be RoboCop, because it shows you, like, when you climb a ladder or do, like, a hand-over-hand, like, on a pipe or zip line or whatever they are, like, he goes super fast. It's really weird. Did anybody else notice that?
I do. You just, like, kind of rocket from one end of the screen to the other for no particular reason.
Yeah, this guy climbs ladders like it's his freaking job. Like, he just goes up that ladder.
And I think, like, you can really mess with the physics. If you, like, jump at the right time while climbing up ladders and stuff, you can fling yourself around like you're Sonic the goddamn Hedgehog. It's weird. Break those physics, man.
And it's crazy because you think, like, there. When you think about, like, what RoboCop is, right? Like, RoboCop is supposed to be the brain of a cop and part of his body that's
mostly his face, yeah,
put into a robot body, right? So why would you build a robot to be super slow? I have no idea. So really, what it's all like a metaphor for, you know, whatever. Like, the point of RoboCop is there's a good movie called RoboCop. It's worth watching. It's very subversive. Everything else that was done with RoboCop is an insult to your intelligence.
RoboCop is honestly my number one favorite film of all time. The only one that comes close to matching up to it is Groundhog Day, so it's kind of been a struggle between them lately, but...
Though I would love to see RoboCop versus Groundhog Day.
I wish!
What if it was just him reliving the day he was, like, shot to pieces?
Oh my god. Over and over.
Okay, someone needs to write this. That's awesome.
Okay, yeah, so RoboCop doesn't make good games, and the most successful RoboCop games do kind of do what you're suggesting, like... It's basically RoboCop sort of walking slowly down the street shooting guys, and that's, like, the whole game is he's just like, do-do-do-do-do. And then there's, like, a billion corpses behind him.
I think I know what the perfect RoboCop game would be. Hmm. Did anyone ever play the GoGo 13 light gun shooter?
No.
Seen it, at least. The one where you have to, like, shoot for a specific objective, and it's, like, really hard to hit him.
It's basically like Silent Scope, but micro missions.
And it works because you don't have health, you have reliability, and if it runs out, no one wants to have you work for them. So that could work for RoboCop pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely... RoboCop was not a franchise that was going to have a great game. I know the Data East game's pretty good, but it was going to struggle to have a great game on the sort of tech and design philosophies of, like, mid-90s, early 90s game design. It just... He can't be treated like a random mascot character, especially the way they made it. I think this game really... They probably could have done a more traditional run-and-gun, you know, contra hard corps or whatever. And even if RoboCop died really easy, you'd still be like, all right, but I'm shooting guys as the robot cop. It's pretty cool.
The thing is, yeah, if they made RoboCop just, like, run, like, a little bit faster, like, would it be accurate to the movie? No, but also in the movie he doesn't fight the Terminator, so who cares? Like, just make it a
I mean
fun
they could have
game.
They could have started, like, the game. They could have been like, RoboCop, we've upgraded your systems to battle the Terminator, get going. And then he's like, sweet, I can run really fast now. And that would have been it. Like, they
this like I they, deal oh. with the, this is one of the worst tropes of, like, movie sci-fi things. It's like, when somebody becomes a cyborg, they become, like, unwieldy, difficult to move, like, you know, everything about them,
you know,
super
exactly
slow.
Why because it's really hard to walk in those prosthetics.
Yeah, but it's stupid. Like, even when they do now in the CGI realm, right? Like, we just had a Star Wars movie where, like, Forrest Whitaker plays a character who has apparently a cyborg leg, and it's really heavy, even though it's obviously, like, his leg is just wrapped in green tape, right? So, you know, like, but he moves like it's really heavy, and it's like clunk clunk. It's like, dude, if you got your leg blown off, fine, all right, don't hire the surgeon who's going to replace it with the world's heaviest prosthetic leg with it, such that you can't run. Like, just get a peg leg, like a leg made of wood will do you just fine.
It's kind of weird because I guess in the Star Wars universe specifically, you know, Luke loses his hand and they're like, okay, have a brand new super fully functional 100% perfect identical to a regular hand.
He's feels like, all right, pain cool.
Yeah.
It feels pain. That's the first thing they show you. Yeah, I mean, this is just, like, is a minor character, and I think that they're just trying... But it's the same thing as RoboCop, though. It's the same principle. It's like, well, he's got a robot leg, so he must move really slowly. It's like, no, you don't understand what robots are for. They are meant to do something, and you design them so that they can do it efficiently. You don't design them so they walk like Frankenstein.
I just, like, for some insane reason, they saw this, and they went, you know, they saw this, and they went, let's make a platformer. That's the thing. Like, this game is more platformer than your regular, like, running gun. This is more platformer than, say, whatever, like, I guess, you know, Gunstar Heroes. This is more platformer than that. There is way more jumping, way more ladder climbing.
What you should, if you want to make a RoboCop game, like, what it should be is you should be not RoboCop, but you should be a person who is trying to, like, create, like, RoboCop access avenues to the crime scene.
So it's like Lemmings, but with RoboCop.
Right.
That sounds great. I would love to play that. Oh,
okay. RoboCop could totally, like bust these fools, but I've got to make it so, like, there's, like, a handicap ramp so RoboCop can, like, get up to.
There's some really great indie zombie game where you basically guide zombies around by building ramps and making them perform actions and stuff that's like that, which sounds exactly what you would do. Like, yeah. Having a RoboCop operator who's just telling RoboCop to do things and also adjusting the environment so RoboCop can do those things.
Yeah, it's like making it like a combination of Contra and Lemmings, where, like, you, like, no, Broforce and Lemmings. So you can, like, blow up the environment and create avenues for RoboCop to move through, and then you, like, you tell RoboCop to move, and then he goes through and he's like, bah, busted.
I know that RoboCop is actually a character in Broforce.
I was going to say, yeah, like, Broforce is a better RoboCop game by virtue of having RoboCop in it.
It has RoboCop in it, and he's a character who can walk at the normal speed of a human being in the game, but also his weapon is you press the fire button, and it does basically nothing. But if you hold it down, it charges up, and then
that was
go.
So good.
And
for as I long as you held it down,
it will just
That's a really neat mechanic. So everybody go play Broforce. It also has the Brominator in it. His power is to get invincible, and he has this minigun with a huge-ass recoil on it. This game, for some reason, reminds me the most of Contra 3 specifically, because you're able to switch between two different weapons. But it's like...
Right, the weapon switching's kind of neat.
Yeah, I'll give it that, but, you know, it's already in Contra 3. I mean... Contra 3 maybe has a little less weapon variety, and, you know, you don't have a life bar in that one, and yet it's a fairer and better designed game for the most part.
I think you have
part.
Unlimited ammo in this, don't you? It's kind of vague how the ammo works. It doesn't show you.
I believe so. You know, at least you don't have to worry about that, but, like, it's just, in Contra, when an attack's gonna hit you, it's usually telegraphed decently enough. Everything's just bullets all the frickin' time in this game.
There's
here,
a
and...
pretty big one crucial difference in these kinds of games, like European Japanese design.
Yeah, what's that?
Japanese games are actually about, like, seeing the attacks coming and avoiding them, and a lot of European games, it's just about kind of enduring them until you get your next health pick up, kind of
which
just
incidentally,
working through attrition.
That does make sense for RoboCop.
Yes.
That's, at least.
That's the thing. But they couldn't get a good game out of it, which
is true.
You gotta
make a game around it. That's what I'm saying. It's like, Broforce plus Lemmings equals a good RoboCop game. But
can I mention that zombie game I mentioned was called Zombie Night Terror, if anyone wants to play zombie with Lemmings.
Okay.
It's very good. I highly recommend it. But anyway, yes.
But Bobbinator, like, your point is very good, because it's like, you do just kind of walk forward and absorb enemy fire. Like, you cannot dodge it. A lot of times you'll be shot by people you cannot see on the screen. And on top of that, this is one of those games where it's kind of a platformer with, like, ladders and such, where you're just a lot of vertical and horizontal, you know, switching back and forth. But the levels have no design to them, so everything is like a bright flashing arrow saying, go this way, down, now go down, now go right, now go... It is, like, intolerable at this point. Like, you should not be making levels like this. Nobody...
To the game's credit, all I'm going to say is that the levels are varied in that they do have different obstacles and stuff happens. Like, it's not the exact same game. The level design is kind of bad.
It's very bad.
It's kind of nonsense, but at the very least, you do feel like... It's not like a good version of this kind of game. It's just like, yeah. I wish they made a better game, because they tried... to a reasonable extent with this one. It feels slightly better than a cash-in. It feels like they were trying to get a RoboCop game out of it. They were trying to make a game that made sense. But it's like almost every decision they made was the wrong one. And so you're like, ooh, no, back off.
I also wanted to note that, like, the levels look kind of cool at first. It's like these dingy Detroit streets and high-rise and corporate office. But then, if you manage to get as far as, like, the second third of the game, it's just, like, cave for, like, the next five or six levels or so. That is just bogus. Like,
can I bring up something else about the game I find interesting?
Bogus. Do, yeah. Yes.
This game has some pretty terrible music, but yet it's strangely memorable to me.
Really?
Yeah, this music is not good, but I do... It's almost evocative of being a robot. That's all I'm going to say for it.
I guess
it's not good music. Well, I wouldn't listen to this music outside of the game, but it's very distinctively...
Terminator.
Yeah.
Terminator.
I'm going to be a little harsher. I think that, you know, I dislike it when people trash the Genesis's sound system because a lot of good stuff has been done on it. But when somebody thinks of bad Genesis music, this is actually a really forthright example of the bad stereotype.
Yeah, this is what people who don't like the Genesis sound chip thinks this is what the Genesis sound chip sounds like.
We've fallen a far distance from Sonic 3.
The only good thing about this shitty music is one thing. I don't think they try and do, like, orchestral horns or anything. At least they're doing industrial sounds. Like, that's the only defense I have for it is they're not trying to be orchestral and trying to sound all, like, wind and sort of instruments. Like, no, that would be horrible.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I want to drag this one down below No One Can Stop Mr. Domino, no higher than that, because
I'm okay with that.
Whoa, wow. We already got right in the ranking. That is a little abrupt. I just wanted to say that we were doting so much on RoboCop earlier. I feel like we didn't talk about the Terminator side of things as much.
I give 0%.
Because there's not that much there.
The Terminator.
You shoot
care.
The Terminator. There's several.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. Let me
tell you this. Hey, let me tell you this. Terminator fans, you have like 1.5 good movies. The mythology is garbage. Okay.
I will say that
the stupidest, most pedestrian sci-fi future I've ever seen.
Takes. Hot takes tonight.
It is awful. Has there been a good Terminator movie after Terminator 2? No, there hasn't, because the mythology is...
The opening to Terminator Genesis is pretty neat. That's the best I got here. I like it.
I didn't hate Terminator 3, but I know I'm in the minority for that one.
I hate Terminator 3 for cutting out the best part of the whole movie. I am disgusted that they cut out...
Really?
What did they do? Because they filmed a scene... where they had a guy that was the body double for the T-100 or whatever, you know, Arnie's model.
T-800, yeah.
Is it 800? Sorry, yes, thank you. I believe so. I'm not up to speed. They had the guy, and it's like, and then he's got this ridiculous voice, and they're like, change the voice, and then the voice is Arnie saying, change the voice. And it was one of the fun callbacks in the movie to the other Terminators, and they took it right out. I'm like, that was the funnest part of this whole movie.
That would have been cool. Although that sounds like something more from Salvation than 3. I don't know.
Salvation? Don't even talk about Salvation.
Okay, Salvation doesn't exist. Let's not go there.
Okay, so we've got to keep ranking this thing, because
so,
we don't want to blow out our time too
much. I mean, ranking it, like, this should be easy, because it's got to go below, so I'm looking at Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball, Terminator versus, you know, RoboCop versus Terminator, the title sucks, so it's got to be below that. Jurassic Park, I had more fun talking about Jurassic Park. I mean, that game is a cattle prod as a weapon. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so, I don't think that game's bad. It's just kind of badly executed. This game just feels kind of limp.
I do think it's better than Jurassic Park. It's a bit more focused, and I appreciate that.
It's focused on a bad thing.
Yeah, like Jurassic Park... It has the first person segments. It has this sort of like RPG, like open world thing going on. There's more to get in that game. This game you can play it. The first minute is the best minute, and it goes downhill. And there's nothing to sort of get out of this game.
The best thing about this game is that each mission starts out with like a mission briefing or a mission objective or something, and then it gives you some horribly obvious like goal. Like I believe the first stage is like. Mission briefing: avoid the bullets.
Yep.
That's the fun part of this game.
Directed
so
five.
I would put it right above Jones and the Fastlane, right below Wall Street Kid, because Wall Street Kid, it had the rictus grin of avarice, which still makes me laugh to this day.
Yeah, I'll give you that Wall Street Kid. It's a bad game, but it's at least a unique concept just done poorly. The thing about RoboCop vs. Terminator is that why play this when there's Contra or Metal Slug or any other some such much funner, better-looking design game? This one's just obsolete in every way possible.
I put it above Jones in the Fast Lane because it didn't make me want to, like, hurt myself. It just made me want to stop playing the game. You know, so it was like, it takes a special amount of pain to be like, I am considering ending my life. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, like, it's an existential level of pain that Jones in the Fast Lane
can
inflict upon you. But perhaps that's a to Jones in the Fast Lane's, you know, benefit. Like, perhaps that's what they were going for. Whereas
Okay, let's not get RVT down too far. I think it has just the slightest, like, edge modicum of quality to just...
Is there any reason why anybody today, in the year 2017 of our Lord, that anybody should be playing RoboCop versus Terminator?
There's no more reason for someone to play Jones in the Fast Lane.
No, Jones in the Fast Lane you can play because you feel like you're just too happy.
Things are just too. I don't want to give Jones too much credit.
We're not giving it credit at this point.
Okay, I don't think that RVT is honestly bad enough to fall down into the Jones zone. To be
fair, I'm thinking about it right now. Jones in the Fast Lane actually made me feel something, whereas RoboCop versus Terminator made me feel nothing other than I wish this game was not on the. You know, I just wish
it's a feeling. It's a feeling, though.
I wish this didn't exist. That's almost a feeling. Okay, so here's the thing about RoboCop versus Terminator. I think it's important. If the year is 1994 and you're a kid, this is not a horrible game. It's got challenge. It's got violence. Oh yeah, and you get to play as a robot, like Cyborg Man. Those are things that, you know, if I had rented this game in 1994, I would have been like, cool, I'm RoboCop, and then I'm shooting guys, I'm like, whoa, they're exploding into blood, that's really cool, and I would have been down with this game for at least an overnight rental. I would have gotten fun out of it. Jones in the Fast Lane, whenever you play it, it's like, oh, no, never. Like, that game was like, for the moment that game came out, I was like, wow, that's sad.
The Sylvester Stallone Judge Dredd game. It's of the same vintage. It is a better designed and more fun game than a game that is called RoboCop versus the Terminator. This is a squandering of what could have been a really fun, zany license mashup. And they blow it. It is not a RoboCop versus Terminator game. It is a RoboCop versus Dudes in Vests game. That's what it is. It is garbage.
But it's not the only RoboCop game. They dumped a lot of those games. Like, this was more like RoboCop's, like, rushing to market before the property's not relevant anymore.
To move things along, I'm okay with between Wall Street Kid and Jones in the Fast Lane.
I mean, are you outvoting Xerxes on this? Because he's desperate to get this below the Jones. He wants it in the Jones zone.
I think that RVT is much more mediocre than anything, not so soul-drainingly, mind-scarringly vicious that it falls below Jones. I think that just barely skirting above it is all that this game deserves.
No, don't be boring.
But I didn't think this game was that boring. I thought, you know, when I played this game, and there's might even be a recording at this moment where I played this game, and, you know, I enjoyed the first 5 minutes, the first 10 minutes. I was like, that was alright. I was enjoying it. Mostly it was too difficult. That was...
You can enjoy this game for longer you enjoy Jones in the Fast Lane.
This is a game where watching the, like, intro demo screen that tells you the story of what's going to happen is more interesting than what happens in the game itself.
No, that was good.
I have been in traffic jams that are more entertaining than this game. Okay? Like, it's such a miserable failure of a game in terms of, like, what it's... It's called RoboCop versus the Terminator, and it sucks.
Xerxes, let's be fair, this was released around the time of RoboCop 3, and that movie is complete balls.
Look, RoboCop is garbage, but they made one good movie out of it. Can you make one good game out of RoboCop? I think so. Like, do something with it. Make it a game that lives up to the promise of the title, and they didn't. What they made is a game that is like, any other game except it's got RoboCop versus the Terminator. It's inexcusable.
I guess if you bought this game looking for those exact things, you would have been disappointed. Maybe that's
it doesn't even deliver that's on the issue. Simplest aspect of its title.
Okay, Xerxes is about to explode. I think we just need to put it down to a raw vote. Above or below Jones?
Does we need the coin?
Wait, hang on. I'm just
below Jones. Below Jones.
Okay, that's my vote. Wait, is Cal saying below Jones? That's what I'm asking.
I'm willing to shift below Jones.
No. Damn
I
it.
Think there must be something in there.
All right, Bob, get the coin. It looks like it has to come down to it.
I can get an Australian coin.
All right.
I've got at least one Australian coin.
All right. The dearest coin there is.
I got the special edition one, which has a kangaroo on the dollar.
Oh,
I've got a watch battery.
You can't flip a watch battery.
Heads below Jones.
All right, I'm not looking at the coin. Okay. I'm going to flip the coin. Here we go. I'm going to try again. I actually flipped it behind myself, and now it's falling on the floor. It's heads.
Yeah! Right.
Well, can't dispute the coin.
Science strikes again.
It's the queen's fat head right there.
Too bad, RVT. You're officially in the Jones Zone. That means you're one of the worst video games ever. Not worse than Amagon. I hate that one more, but for as banal and mediocre and premise-wasting as this one is, I guess that's what it deserves.
I will say, on a technical level, it's better than Desert Strike Return of the Gulf, the Game Gear port. That was an abominable port that you just couldn't play. So at the very least, it wouldn't go any lower than that. So good on it.
Whoever it was that nominated this,
apparently you've got a new enemy. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
this is,
well, maybe
he's going
they,
on the list.
Some people nominate games they want us to hate. But I honestly don't know what to tell you. I just don't
end up alone in a room with Xerxes. That's all.
Get help. That's all I can say. Is just get help. Get help while you can. It's not too late. Terminator.
Everyone, Jeff the Electric Viking here. You might remember me as the biggest Superscalar fan in the world, or perhaps as the resident Bad at Games guy. Nevertheless, I've had the good fortune of working with the HD101 gang for over a year now, and I have a stake in seeing the outfit continue to move from strength to strength, and that's where you come in. I would humbly ask that you consider a small monthly contribution to HD101 on Patreon. Your money funds paid writing on the video games that you love, helps fund this show, and on top of that, you'll gain access to an add-on version of the HD101 podcast, with bonus content every week. All of this can be had for the price of a coffee, beer, or whatever the hell it is you drink in your corner of the world. Thanks for your consideration. And remember, be sure to have your pets spayed or neutered.
The next game we're talking about is Pokemon Red, but we're also talking about Pokemon Blue. And they were nominated by Gord Captain on iTunes. That's right, Gord Captain, who has nominated several games that we've talked about, gave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and therefore, we are nominating the game that Gord Captain presented to us. It was developed by Game Freak. It was published by Nintendo. Perhaps you have heard of them. It was a Game Boy game. Its earliest release date, February 27th, 1996 in Japan. It was pretty well hyped up by the Nintendo Power scene at the time, before it came out. So I knew about it before it was even a thing, back when they thought they were still going to localize it as Pocket Monsters.
I was really right in the middle of the giant Pokemon craze that hit the U.S.
Yeah.
That was when I was really aware, so to speak, pretty much anything, and I kind of fell into that hype train for a while,
yeah.
But I kind of grew out of it by the time Game Boy Color hit, I think.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm pretty much with Bob here. I was really big into the first wave, and then I liked the Gold and Silver well enough. But then, like, after that, I realized they're going to keep this going for a while, and I'm not sure if I can keep playing the same basic iteration of these rules for, like, six more generations. So I think I'm just going to bow out.
I think what you're going to get into very quickly is that there's a very specific time in a person's life, in a child's life, where Pokemon is kind of like exactly what they want out of a game. It's the perfect game for that age group. So the moment you fall outside of that age range, and Nintendo kind of makes games in that age range, Pokemon games, you stop caring a lot. I, too, I played Blue, a little bit of Red, and then I played, like, completely clocked Gold, and then basically stopped playing. I recently picked up Sun of the Pokemon and Moon and Sun games or whatever. So I played a bit of Sun, so I kind of know where the games went. But it does feel like unless you're a crazy Pokemon fanatic, and they do exist, there's a lot of them, you just kind of don't actually play that many Pokemon games. You play like one or two because they don't change very much, which is really handy for us.
Yeah. All right. So my relationship to Pokemon is I was way too old to be into the Pokemans when they were new. Like, I was actually on board when they were first talked about in 1996. I was like, this sounds really cool. Like, I'm like this. But to me, what it reminded me of is like, this sounds like Tamagotchi. That's how old I am. I'm like, this sounds like a ripoff of Tamagotchi. It's like, if you could battle Tamagotchi, that's what this sounds like. Tamagotchi the RPG.
Battling Tamagotchis, I think that's a different franchise.
By the time it came out in North America, I was not interested. I was playing a lot of Gran Turismo 2 and stuff like that. And, you know, I had like a girlfriend and everything. I was just too old. And I'm not like saying like, oh, you know, it's like Pokemon's for nerds. And that's not that. But I didn't have any friends who were playing Pokemon. And that is a big part of it.
For me, though, just my personal experience, it was like you could not escape from Pokemon. And I like cereals, Pop Darts, crappy canned pasta, waffle makers.
Wow, it's like the Sonic franchise.
Pretty much, yeah.
Sorry,
for the latter half of the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, no, like the whole point of the, you know, it was a big explosion of popularity. Would you say, and because I'm, you know, looking at the date, you know, 96, and so I think 97 in the US, I didn't check that, but I'm pretty sure it was like a year later. Would this game basically have salvaged the Game Boy? Because by now, the Game Boy was 8 years old, I think, you know, around that thing. So it was really old hardware, and I think that this franchise kind of as a whole helped keep the Game Boy relevant for, well, pretty much until they replaced it. Like, this really kicked up the whole console, because suddenly everyone needed a Game Boy to play Pokemon, and they really did. Like, this was, if you weren't into Pokemon as a kid when this game was out, specifically Pokemon Red and Blue, I think the later games, while popular, and I think they sell more because, you know, whatever, they sell more, they're not as, like, dominant for kids. They're just always there now, whereas this was the first huge explosion of this concept. Because it is kind of an original concept. I know people will go on about Shin Megami Tensei and, like, all these things. Like
Tensei.
Tensei, thank you. You know, they'll go on about, oh, well, that does the same thing, only you get to talk to him and negotiate, and it's way better, and everyone's like, okay, well, that's why it didn't sell fucking, like, 10 million copies. Apologies for swearing, right. But
yeah, I mean, the thing about Pokemon is that it takes a basic concept as SMT, recruiting demons, but it dives more into it, because only there you had, could only have, like, two or three demons at the same time. Here, you get to have up to a team of six. The fights are only one-on-one, so it's like more involved and yet simpler to grasp at the same time. Like, all you need to do to get those on your side is just, you know, walk out in the wild, then beat them up some, as unethical as that sounds, and then throw a ball at them.
And I think an important part is that the whole concept of the franchise or premise is that you get them all. You have to get them all. You know, like,
no, you don't have to get them all, but it encourages you to get them all.
If you don't get them all, you don't, you know, your life is empty if you don't.
You're
have
inferior.
Every single, yeah.
No.
You are.
Look, no. Like, in seriousness, the Pokemon franchise, I think one of its main strengths is that it is very much play it however you want. Like, there's a very open-endedness. Yeah. Even though Pokemon Red and Blue of all of them, you know, it's, well, you have to go through the storyline, which is very basic. You know, you go gym to gym to gym. There's a little bit of sidestepping with some stuff going
the
on.
The very best.
Where, you know, you got Giovanni, and I think there's some other shenanigans going on. But for the most part, it is very much you raise some Pokemon, and the way the game's designed, you don't have to change Pokemon. That's the crazy thing about this game, even though it's like got the weaknesses and strengths and all that sort of thing. You can basically grind your way out of most situations, and that's an important part to how this game works. You can play favorites and ignore the greater part of the cast, and it doesn't really matter. Or you can capture everything, or you can carefully judge your battles. The game's never too hard, like, it really isn't.
Now, this is going to sound crazy, but I think we need to very, very briefly explain the Pokemon gameplay to people who may not.
It is genuinely crazy.
I feel stupid just saying that, but yeah.
Do we really have to?
Yes, we do.
Let's explain the basic Pokemon gameplay loop so that it makes sense why it's so popular. I mean, Pokemon is set in the world of, I don't think, is it literally called the world of Pokemon? I know that the different...
I think it's the Kanto Islands.
Yeah, there's well, Kanto, it doesn't really matter. And there's like, some other islands. But the point is, it's a completely new, like, it's a world that's mostly similar to our world, kind of idealized, more Japanese-y sort of world, because, of course, it's the developers are from there, unsurprisingly. And instead of it being a regular world, there's these Pokemon, and they're called pocket monsters in Japan, even though, I'm sorry, I'm going to get sidetracked a lot, because there's a lot to talk about in Pokemon. So yeah, there's all these Pokemon in this world, and they kind of just serve a whole bunch of purposes. There's a whole bunch of Pokemon.
They live in harmony with mankind.
And then mankind enslaves them.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll get into that, but I want to point something out here. I actually remember this. There used to be on the Nintendo Powers, like Nintendo's Nintendo channel on AOL, there was an Ask Dan column.
Dan Olsen. I remember
Dan in question was Dan Olsen. The guy said, you may know him as Dan, the last Metroid is in captivity. The galaxy is at peace.
Yep,
Olsen.
That's him.
Mainly, he was the guy who read and ignored all of my, when's Metroid 64 coming out? You know, so he did not pay attention to that, but he explained in a very early one of those columns. It's like, yes, it was called Pocket Monsters. We told you a game called Pocket Monsters was coming out, but now it's going to be called Pokemon, which is another, it's a shortening of the name that they use in Japanese. But also, it doesn't, like, you know what Pocket Monster sounds like, right? You know what people are going to say, right? Like, this whole...
Especially since, you know, you're whipping out your Pocket Monster, like, that's pretty
obvious. Yeah, it's like...
at least one person at Nintendo of America was like, no. No.
No, you cannot do that.
No, don't do that.
So, yeah, I mean, that's on top of that, but yeah, but so... Look, if you're one of the, there's got to be a lot of people out there. We don't think there are, but there are. Like, there are a lot of people out there who've never played a Pokemon game. I don't think I played a Pokemon game at all until Pokemon, I think, like, Platinum for the DS. That was my first real Pokemon game.
Well, I think an important part of the Pokemon franchise, though, and this is very much tying into why Pokemon was so successful, it was a massive multimedia sort of just avalanche, and Bob mentioned it with Pop-Tarts and things, but, you know, this thing had a supporting anime, supporting cartoon, which is probably what they would have called it at the time, because anime didn't exist.
I remember that anime, because, small personal story, one time I rented a VHS of one of the episodes of the anime, and I watched that thing so many times, I learned how to work the VCR because I watched it that often.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, and that's really important, because... you couldn't escape Pokemon as a concept. So the cartoon, I think, filled in a lot of details, not just about the world, because the game doesn't really fill in that many details. It's got a little bits and pieces, but there's not a big sort of thing. But it even kind of explained to you how the game's world functions. And I really think that the anime basically operated as a tutorial for very young children to play Pokemon.
It 100% does, and it still works. I can tell you that my son got into Pokemon on his own, not because of me, because I didn't play it at all at that point. So, but he he got into it because he was watching the old cartoon on Netflix. And it explains everything you need to know about Pokemon. It explains, like, the weaknesses and strengths. Like, such and such Pokemon, like, grass type is strong against water type for who knows what reason. It doesn't really make sense, but that's how it works. And it does that for everything. And it also tries to add some humanity to the characters and the undertaking that the characters are doing.
Right, because most of the gym leaders that feature in the game are in the anime, so you get a much better sense of these characters, whereas in the game, they're much like, oh, you want to challenge Sabrina? Here we go! And then you're just fighting Sabrina, whereas you learn about the character in the anime.
But it's interesting because, like, in the Pokemon world, like, there are Pokemon are separate from animals, which is the weirdest part about it.
There's a whole really Wikipedia entry on the Pokemon Wiki, which I believe is animals in the Pokemon world, and it goes into this, like...
I think they start, like, phasing out the real animals.
They discreetly moved a lot of the real animals out as Pokemon has evolved. But definitely in the period of Red and Blue, it was a lot of animals and Pokemon, and they were very distinct between the two. I think because at the very early part of the franchise, they didn't want to push as much, like, people eat the cow Pokemon because it's delicious. Because they.
none of us have mentioned that this series is basically Cot Fighter the RPG.
Yeah, so Pokemon is one of my favorite RPG tropes, which is like JRPG tropes, which is like a universe that is built around a single mechanic. So. For example, like in Chrono Cross, like the universe is built around the field developing mechanic, right?
Right.
Like that's everybody understands it, and that's how it works. And it's like you have attacks, you have magic, and they have field properties, and you fill the field with. It's still one of the most unique, JRPG mechanics that's out there, and I don't think it's ever been duplicated. Play Chrono Cross, but for Pokemon, it's all built around cockfighting. That's what it is. It's a cockfighting world. It's a world of cockfighting, and everybody understands cockfighting.
And this is why they changed the name from Pocket Monsters.
Yeah, it just gets worse and worse the more you think about it. So, but yeah, no, basically it is, it's like animal fighting, like dog fighting. You can call it that, okay? Call it dog fighting.
Yeah, dog fighting. Yeah, and so, and all the characters in the world, which, it's kind of taking it out a bit of the difference, but Final Fantasy VIII, you could play cards against everyone, the Triple Triad minigame, which was kind of neat.
I love that minigame.
And in the Pokemon world, everyone just has Pokemon. Doesn't matter if they're Susie the Housewife, or Frankie the Child, or Triple Homicide Murderer Bobby. Like, it doesn't matter. They're all like, hey, do you want to fight? And it's like, all right, cool.
Frankie the Child?
What?
Nobody is called the Child.
There's a the Child in Pokemon. Look, there's definitely
Babyface
the Child.
Nelson was called Babyface, not Nelson the Child. Nobody's called the Child.
There's so many children in the Pokemon, which is actually really important. There's a lot of kids in the Pokemon world, and they all have Pokemon, which is, not all games, even RPGs. Pokemon
it is,
don't
in
have...
the game. Look, in the game, in Pokemon, capturing, training, and fighting is a analog for puberty. That's what it is. Like in the, especially in Red and Blue, it is very direct. That is what it is. Like,
right, because you have to go
out there to make a name for yourself. You are leaving the home and becoming an adult. But instead of becoming an adult, you're becoming a Pokemon trainer, which is what is expected of you.
You know what else is great about this universe? Like, all dispute is resolved through Pokemon battles. Like,
exactly.
You're going out to fight a crime syndicate. You find the boss. You Pokemon duel with him. He just accepts it. He's just okay with whatever happens now because you beat
him. Think like if Team Rocket and Giovanni really wanted to cause some mayhem, they'd have guns.
Yeah, like I think I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure at some point in the anime, someone flashes a gun. Like it's gun time, and everyone's like, "Whoa, something's going on!" But
this is a world where bicycles are still a thing. Where it's like, "You've got a bicycle? That's rad."
That's also quite Japanese. Like bicycles are relatively popular to get around.
Well, not just that, but like the bicycle as a coming of age thing. It's like, oh, you can ride your bicycle.
You got to get your bicycle to upgrade you. Yeah, that was neat. The game has
a song
good...
that plays when you're riding the bicycle.
There's a lot of nice touches. It's a well made game. I don't know how much we'll actually talk about the game in terms of its production.
Okay, so let's talk about it really quickly as a game.
It's pretty
well.
Because
we're talking about specifically Pokemon Red and Blue. Look, I because we got to talk about ranking it too. And our top of our ranking list is very Nintendo heavy. Technically, this is Game Freak and not Nintendo.
Yeah. I can sweat it out and say, well, technically, Game Freak is the one that made this one. It's very, very technically, but...
Here's a starting point. Is this better or worse than Final Fantasy VII?
Well, I don't think we're ready to trot out the rankings yet for this one.
Might as well. If you're going to compare it to Final Fantasy VII... We should, because that's a great comparison point.
Hold it. Have we talked as much about the gameplay as we could have?
It's a JRPG, except that your party is whatever Pokemon are in your bag. I don't know what you call them, but you can have like six Pokemon.
I think it's on your belt, isn't it? I think it's usually like a little thing that you open. I can't remember. Yeah, I do. The Pokeballs get bigger when you play with them, and that's That's what happens. It's not my fault. This game is like
that.
Well,
you know, in fairness, like, testicles don't get bigger when you play with them. They're still testicles.
Who's talking about testicles,
size,
man? I'm not.
I'm just talking
not
about
talking
balls.
About
here.
Yeah, let's talk about balls.
All right.
But hold
so,
on. So,
look,
yeah.
All right. Here's the thing. It's like you capture Pokemon. Each Pokemon has a property or two, which is like its type, right? So it can be like fighting type or fire type or lightning type or water type or grass type or et cetera, and on and on. Each one has strengths and weaknesses against other types of things. And so it's like creating a really large roster of JRPG party members. But then you choose like six that are going to be like your crew for the time being, and you roll around with that crew and then you fight other people.
That's a really different way of handling it than your typical JRPG, and I actually appreciate that a lot. I feel that adds a lot more strategy and actual thought required to actually do well than most other games of the time.
I would say if you were ever... Because you can fight other players. Right from the very beginning of Pokemon, you could link your system up with the link cable to fight other players and to trade with them. That was another very big feature of this game. Red and Blue, because I didn't technically mention it. We keep forgetting that maybe people don't know these things. But Red and Blue and all the Pokemon games, they have two different, marginally different rosters of Pokemon. So I can't remember offhand, but I think between the two of them, they have like 120, 130 each, and then the rest are shuffled differently between them. So you got
I know that Red has Gloom in it, and Blue has Vulpix in it, two of my favorites. So
yes, but Blue has Sand Lad, I think his name is.
Sandshrew.
Yeah, he looks like Sonic the Hedgehog, so I always liked Sandshrew a lot. He's great.
For the record, I feel like people need to know this. My favorite's Dragonite.
My favorite's Psyduck.
Good choice. Either Snorlax or Gloom is my favorite. Heart. I'm going to go with Snorlax.
You can tell that we're all, except maybe Xerxes, early Red and Blue players, so we're not going to start drawing from the extended cast that has been added later on.
Would you guys say that you didn't get into later generations as much because they already started to feel too complicated?
I don't think that they were complicated. I really think, and I was going to talk about this, the gameplay is almost perfect for what it's trying to accomplish, but I don't think it's particularly interesting, especially to play for dozens upon dozens of hours, game after game after game, for me personally, because it's almost, it is very close to Excel sheet, you know, it's very close to, nowadays, you know, people whip out the Pokemon Bulbapedia, and they're just like, look at the Pokemon, all right, these Pokemon have these abilities, this is this and this, and they math out this really big, complicated team to play, like, the min-maxing game.
What I like about it is, the min-maxing game is Pokemon. That is it. That is what you do. That is the point. If you want to be good at the game, that's how you play it. And what I like about it is that it's in a weird way, it's kind of like an edutainment game. Although it's not teaching you, like, you know, anything useful.
It's teaching you, like,
there's no such
abstraction.
Thing as Pokemon, and you don't...
You gotta
it's teaching you to think about the world in terms of advantages and preparation and strategy, and it's teaching you to approach the world as a contest, and which sounds really negative, but I don't mean it in that way. I'm just saying, like,
it encourages you to try your best.
It encourages you to think about systems. Let me put it that way. How about that?
I'm sure, like a lot of young gamers that became game developers probably did play Pokemon and would have gotten something out of that, like just... And people who like science and math and things probably got a decent amount out of it.
in a weird way, like, for example, like, I would say, like, the game, Gloob's Game Genie changed my life as a gamer because it taught me something about how games are made. Because when you're messing around with codes and stuff, what you're doing is you're changing, like, the values of stuff in the game. And in a weird way, like, Pokemon is kind of the same thing, where it's like, it presents to you a system that you could understand even as an 8-year-old.
I think Gloob went bankrupt over the Game Genie, as an aside. I think that they got sued.
Well, that was for legal reasons, but whatever. But I mean, it's really has nothing to do with the Game Genie. I'm just talking about because I didn't start playing Pokemon when it was new.
Oh no, I was just thinking, like, I feel like Pokemon was one of the first games that probably really moved the Game Genie and moved those sort of systems to alter that.
Yeah,
like,
no,
yeah,
they,
people probably would have been like, finally, I really need this to do this. And I feel like that's kind of an interesting aside that you've brought up by accident to an extent.
The weird thing is, like, Pokemon Red and Blue are probably the most entertaining JRPGs of the 90s to watch speedruns of, because there are lots and lots of bugs and exploits and stuff that you can do to those games.
There's some great bugs and exploits that were discovered that created rumors and stuff, which
way,
is fun.
Way later,
you know. They're... The classic, I just want to mention, like, you know, Missing No and, like, these... Basically, there's a small amount of, like, gaming urban legend canon buried in Pokemon. Like, it's one of the games that contributed to that in a big way, which is, you know, another just little thing that Pokemon inadvertently brought to the table.
Segue into... So, yeah, right. It's a JRPG where there's a lot of class relationship and dynamic type things that... I feel like it's better than a lot of JRPGs that came before. If you look at...
I think especially
JRPG,
on the Game Boy.
Way better.
It was a revolution for a reason. I mean, it just had everything going for it. It played well. The Pokemon designs themselves are really entertaining.
Also, the Pokemon can evolve. We haven't actually mentioned that.
Oh, we totally forgot the
evolution
part.
But that was a humongous part of the franchise that we've managed to
just get over. It's a really essential part, yeah. I mean, some Pokemon don't evolve, but most of them have, like, 2 or 3 phases. Some, you just level them up and they get that way. You can choose to delay their level up in case you want them to learn skills faster, so that's up to you.
You can some will only get, like, their advanced levels if you trade them. Like,
yeah.
I think
some need
the champ, I think, only does that if you trade them. And
that sounds
same
right.
With Steelix,
yeah, and some, like, require specific inventory items to boost them. Like, you need that for Eevee, which... is a famous Pokemon that can turn into, like, 8 different elemental forms, depending on, like, what elemental thingy you bestow.
Which, again,
upon them.
If you didn't pay attention to anything, the anime did mention some of this stuff as well. It would show up in there, and it would help teach kids that as well, which is interesting. That
it was one of the most... It's perhaps the purest and most well-executed multimedia phenomenon of the 90s.
Yeah, I think that's pretty easy to...
There's no comparison. Like, everything that they did informed everything else, including, like, we haven't talked about yet, the card game, right?
I was just about to mention that. Ooh, the card game used to be huge with people I knew.
Oh, it was huge in the playground where I was from. I think, like most places, I think it may have gotten banned eventually, because it always did. That was inevitable, but, you know, gotta collect them all.
Yeah, I think I still actually have some cards. Also, I liked the video game based off of the card game, based off of the video game.
That was a
ballsy
move, yeah. But
it was surprisingly fun. It still kind of had its own feel, despite being a second-degree relation to Pokemon. But
to this day, the easiest way to get into Pokemon, and the cheapest way, is to do the online card game, which is totally free, I think, at this point.
I want to say that we probably may never get to speak about it, but maybe in the distant future. The Pokemon card game is very, the game, Pokemon card game, Pokemon game, that's still one of the better card game playing simulators, because it includes an overworld of, like, a little bit like of an arena, and you get to talk to people and you get to trade game cards in the game and stuff. It's a really nice little thing, and a lot of card games don't really, they either pretend that it's, like, in Yu-Gi-Oh!, it's the world is already playing that card game. It's not like a simulation thing. It's like, no, everyone plays this card game and it's, like, part of the world. Whereas a Pokemon card game is this weird, like, Pokemon exists and this is the Pokemon card game and you're playing the Pokemon card game in this world where it's really odd stuff, really cool. Getting off track, I'm sorry, crazy. But it's really neat.
And we got to rank this. We got to rank this thing. And I honestly don't know how. Like, Pokemon Red and Blue, or if you're in Japan, Pokemon Red and Green, we're aware of you.
And Yellow, we can throw Yellow in the batch as well.
We can even throw Yellow in the batch. It's true, because there's really no, like, mechanical changes. It's just that you got a Pikachu who follows you around.
Right? Yeah, Pikachu's the main thing. I think that you can link it to the pedometer or something. I think there was a thing for that.
What about Pokemon Stadium? Would that count this, or is that different?
No. It's a bit far out, but no.
Wait, what about Pokemon Snap? That was some good stuff, huh?
It's way far out.
But that is part of the multimedia push. I love that. That's all part of that push.
So basically what we're saying to the home audience now is that Pokemon, kind of a big deal. Whether or not you think it's still relevant today, we're talking about when it just exploded onto the scene, and, well, frankly, I think it deserves just about all of its accolades.
Let me just briefly re-mention that Pokemon Go was humongous.
It
was
that too.
And that was basically...
Did that already die out?
No, people play it, but it's just people who don't play other games, really. It's like a very... It's a niche thing that lots of people play, but they're more... We probably wouldn't associate them with kind of ourselves, like, as in people that...
We don't talk about those people.
But it's very much people that don't play, like, regular games. They're mostly on mobile and stuff.
I played Pokemon Go for a while because I liked the, walk around and find stuff aspect to it.
Yeah, I've got a lot of complaints about
how to
invoke it.
It's not a very well-designed game.
No.
In the sense that, like, if you walk a lot, and you don't always constantly look at your phone to capture Pokemon, like, the game becomes really, really hard.
I wanted to try Pokemon Go, but either their server sucked or I was in such a rural area, I just could not make it work.
It's actually both. Yeah. They really screwed people who were rural. But where I wanted to really go with that, because I didn't want to get too deep into Pokemon Go, was specifically that game basically traded on Pokemon Red and Blue nostalgia. And it was huge.
100% did. It just had, like, the original 150 Pokemon.
That's what it launched
with.
That
was what its, like, starting roster was. And it reintroduced a whole generation to, introduced a whole generation to that classic roster of 150 Pokemon, which to this day is
151 counting
still,
you.
Whatever.
Sorry.
Hate this guy.
I'm just being an asshole.
Okay, so, but that's what it was, like, to this day, those 150 original Pokemon are still the most iconic. Like, nobody really cares about the ones they've introduced after that.
Well, I think it's important because... to understand, I think, and this is a key here, as I said, like, Nintendo and, I guess, Game Freak, because they're still technically, like, are they a team in Nintendo now, or are they just...
They're still technically independent, I think.
So, what's important is they basically make a new Pokemon game every so often, and when they release it, and I do think that they're basically trying to capture that generation of children, essentially. And it's kind of... Maybe it's a bit awkward to be like, let's get children addicted to Pokemon. But yeah, like, they release a new generation, and they're like, okay, this is your generation's Pokemon. And then it gives them the language to speak that Pokemon game. Because they don't want to speak about Pokemon Red and Blue, because that's not their Pokemon. You've got...
They don't get...
All you have to do is find out how old someone is, and you can probably hit them with the Pokemon game that was released around when they were of the best age to play Pokemon.
It works. And now we got to rank it, and we got to talk about the fact that, like, Pokemon Red and Blue is the first iteration of the game, but the game has not really changed all that much since then. Now, I'm not going to say that, like, later versions of Pokemon aren't better, but I feel like saying, like, picking a version of Pokemon and saying this is the ultimate version is almost impossible.
It's not really is an ultimate version. That's the catch here. They're, they remade Red and Blue, and I think that the remakes are superior to the original game, somewhat unsurprisingly.
Yeah, so, Fire Red and Leaf Green. Somehow I didn't pick those up yet.
Literally no reason to play this game again. Like, there really isn't, unless you are someone who grew up with Red and Blue and is like, I just want to play Red and Blue again. That's it. Like, the only reason to play them.
As we rank them, should we rank them as the, like, platonic form of Pokemon? Is that the way to rank it? Or should we just look at them as that, no, this is like any other game, the earliest version of the game is not the best version? I don't think you can look at later versions of Pokemon and say, like, these are much, much better.
Red and Blue was the perfect Pokemon game when it came out, and it already did everything that Pokemon needed to do. Every game after it is just refinements, adjustments to the formula. It's not, like, really super important. I would be happy to rank this as, you know, kind of mostly as the definitive article in terms of just Pokemon, because I don't really want to rank more Pokemon games other than this one, because they're not that different. They, you know, they add team battles, they add egg raising, they make it easier to level up Pokemon, they make it easier to do this, they balance that. You know, they introduce new types to balance the game. All these great little features that make the game more pleasant to play, but this is still 90% Pokemon.
How about this? As a compromise, we'll rank this game not as the best Pokemon, but as the second best Pokemon. The assumption that there is a later Pokemon version that is better. But we're not going to have to decide which one that is, but we will say that there's only one that's better.
I mean, gold and silver
stupid
were
and arbitrary, but I think that will work, because whatever version of Pokemon that's the best version, it won't be Red and Blue.
The best, okay, this is what I was saying before. The best version of Pokemon is the one you played first. That's the best version. Like, it doesn't, it's kind of person to person. Like, you know, the nostalgia that you have attached to the game is based on what set of Pokemon you... Look, I care about the first 150 because those are the 150 that I know pretty much off by heart. I'm sure someone who's 10 years younger than me knows the, whatever, like the 400 to 600s. Something like, you know what I'm saying? You know where I'm going with that?
Right. So my point is, like, the gameplay of Pokemon never improves. But the presentation of Pokemon does improve. And we just haven't been, you know, that game hasn't been nominated. If somebody, like, personally, my favorite is the Diamond, Platinum, whatever, Pearl era, because that's when I started playing. So that I guess reinforces your point, Cal. But I would put it above Sonic 3 and Knuckles and below Lodrona Online.
I'll allow that, because I kind of rank by originality, and technically, I guess the first game in the series is more original than the third.
Well, the thing, literally, this game is the template for every Pokemon game. There's no... This game is Pokemon. None of the other Pokemons would come close to existing if it wasn't
okay,
for this
so
one.
Should we rank it as if it is the platonic form of Pokemon? Like, this is the stand-in for all Pokemon games. Even if people nominate other Pokemon games, we will rank them as if they are mere pretenders to the Pokemon throne. Can we say that?
Well, I do feel like, this is basically... We're just ranking... I would consider myself mostly ranking Pokemon here, because splitting hairs on Pokemon is really... Every Pokemon is the same formula. It's the same... Even down to having an anime, it's the same formula. And they just rinse and repeat, and it works perfectly every time, because it's...
Well, then, if we're going to just rank Red Blue as all of Pokemon ever...
No, we're not ranking it as all of Pokemon. We're ranking it as the purest form of Pokemon.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean.
We can treat as the representative.
The blueprint, the genesis, the one that you want to look to see how the rest of it rolls out. That's what I'm saying, basically.
Okay, well, let's we got Metroid and Super Metroid on our list here. We know Metroid's a more primitive, like, version, and then Super Metroid was refined of it, and it distilled different components of it. I don't feel like any of the later Pokemon really distilled anything more out of the Pokemon idea.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. It's like, honestly, as the world's biggest original Metroid fan, I will say that, like, the difference between the original Metroid and all subsequent Metroids is gigantic compared to the difference between the original Pokemon and subsequent Pokemon.
So then let me get this straight. In that case, if we were asked to review any other Pokemon game after, then it would necessarily rate lower than Red and Blue because, you know, it just doesn't match up to the original impact that it had. Am I correct to assume this?
I think we gotta say that.
Okay, if that's because... the case...
I think we got it. Like, I didn't want to, but I think you're right.
Okay, then if that's the case, between Super Mario 64 and Katamari Damacy, this game's too big. I think we have to rate it as big as it is.
Okay, all right. So I'm going to put it below Katamari Damacy, above Mario 3.
Okay.
Simply because Mario 3 is kind of an iteration on... If somebody, like I said, if somebody nominated Super Mario Brothers, the original... I would put it at number one just because of where
that's
my
totally
heart
fair.
Is personally.
Plus, I think SMB3 right? is a little overrated, but I know. I'm,
yeah,
everyone
well,
hates me for
that,
it.
But,
I just wanted to mention
but
that.
But I'm just saying,
come
like,
at me.
I would put it above SMB3 because SMB3 is building upon something that came before it, and it would not be as good as it was if it were.
Okay.
The first attempt at that.
All right.
But to say that, I want to say, like, nobody has nominated a Dragon Warrior game, or, sorry, Dragon Quest game.
They must not be popular with our fan base. That's the only explanation.
It's the weirdest thing ever.
So what I will say, and I agree below Katamari Damacy, and there's exactly one reason why, and there's only one reason why, Pokemon is so incredibly successful as a multimedia assault, as a... Like, it just, from all directions, it attacks you, and it's Pokemon. Katamari Damacy basically throws a disc at you. It's just like, take it. And then it blows you away. It doesn't need anything else to even come close to just being itself. Whereas Pokemon, and I do think even the later games, they do need that extended sort of culture around them. They do kind of need your friends to be playing it to really get the most out of it. And yes, the newer games do have like Street Pass and all these other like bits and pieces, and that's really great, but I do think that it gives Katamari Damacy just the slightest of edges.
Okay.
The thing is, Katamari Damacy doesn't have to prove itself to you. It doesn't have to make you like it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say this, like, I think without Pokemon, I feel like the zeitgeist would be different, to use our favorite word.
I love zeitgeist.
I do love that word, but like it changed the calculus of what we expect out of games in a way. Like, although Final Fantasy VII broke JRPGs into the mainstream in the West, which it did,
Pokemon was a Trojan horse that did the
Pokemon,
exact same thing.
Pokemon did the same thing. It was building on that, but it was better than Final Fantasy VII. The characters have staying power that Final Fantasy VII could only dream of. The art direction is way better, and it had this whole cartoon series that it's iconic. Like,
Can I point out something very important here? Because it does kind of extend from this. Something that's very underestimated about Pokemon is that because it was on the Game Boy and it was so later on, it was actually accessible to a much broader audience of people, because you didn't need an expensive PlayStation, you didn't need an expensive SNES. You could get basically the cheapest console around. You didn't need a television. You could get an old brick of a Game Boy. You could slam Pokemon in it, which is already cheaper because it's a handheld game, and you could play it. And it's got that edge of accessibility, which really boosts it.
To have the total experience, which means Game Boy, link cable, cartridge,
and you didn't need a link cable.
Less than $100.
If you had a friend who was, you know, who had one, and so that's this was such an accessible game, and I think that's really important for it. Which
it is,
you know, especially for children.
Yeah, it is, and it brings people into games. And this is one of the points we raised in episode 65 when we were talking about Papa Wii O, but also like Dr. Mario and other games like that brought new players into the medium. And I think Pokemon did that, and I think it still does that. And I think that looking at the top, like like Katamari Damacy, like you can make it marginally better, like slightly better, but you can't actually make a better Pokemon game than Pokemon. It's already Pokemon. Like, you cannot... The changes are so minuscule. They just don't count.
They basically make it feel like a game from today. You play this one right now, you'll be like, oh, that's... it's a bit old, isn't it? But...
And on top of that, if they changed it any more than they already do, you would be offended
and disappointed. Wow.
Because the gameplay of the original is so good that you don't want them to change it too much. And that's why it hasn't changed. It's not like a lack of originality. It's no, sure, there's tons of stuff you could do with the basic JRPG mechanics of Pokemon, but they nailed something about the like Dragon Quest, you know, idea of, or the Shin Megami Tensei, or whatever you want to point to. They figured out something that was so elemental and perfect and relatable and fun that if you changed it any drastically, people would be disappointed and the series would die.
And it's so important because the elements, because we know, you can grasp those as a 5-year-old, I want to say, is about when you can start grasping yeah. the basic elements. Any more complicated, you throw it all out the window and you've got... You just can't get that. But whereas very young children can stumble through the game and they can get there, and it has to be that basic to work. And they keep it. So, they've kept it strong for, what is it, like, two decades?
25, yeah, years. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. So, okay, so that's two votes for above Mario 3. I think with Satenga, that was three votes.
I'll live with it because it's Pokemon. I know it's a big deal. I'm not going to fight it.
All right, that's it. Pokemon.
Because we all live in a Pokemon world.
World, yeah, that's right. It cannot be beat.
That's a time.
It is right now number three on our list. Number three out of over 200 games. And dare I say, it deserves 100% that position.
Agreed.
What a brilliant and fascinating, engrossing discussion that was. But you know what? The party doesn't have to stop now. No, sir. If you were a Patreon patron, giving $2 a month or more, pledging $2 a month or more on patreon.com/HG101, what you'd be hearing right now is this ranking the incredible Cruisin' USA arcade racer. Was it the best arcade racer ever made? No. But it was fun to talk about. And it's definitely well worth your money. It's you know, for the price of a cup of tea, as they say. You could be hearing all these. And, you know, we've ranked so many bonus games at this point, and there's no way to hear them. They're not going up on YouTube. I'll tell you that right now. Something to think about. Also, remember, we really desperately need you to go to the Unbound website. Go to hardcoregaming101.net and check out the pinned link at the top to fund the Japanese Gaming Obscurities book, which is going to be our coolest, best book ever if it gets funded. It's going to be the graphic design is going to be done by the great folks at Unbound. Who contacted us and made an offer to us to do this crazy cool book. It's going to be amazing. You're going to love it. I know I've pitched in and bought my copy, and you should too. Anyway, that's all for this episode of Hardcore Gaming 101's Top Games Podcast. Special thanks goes out to @SolventImage on Twitter and @GordCaptain on iTunes for nominating those fantastic games. And thanks as well to those of you we haven't gotten to yet. We hope to get to you as soon as humanly possible. And thanks to my lovely co-host and compatriots, and to our editor, Jeff Rude, our theme song composer, Miteki, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter, Bobinator. And thanks, of course, to the support and feedback of listeners like you. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. And you can help us out by subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, by following @GC9X and @HG_101 on Twitter. You can also converse and make friends at bit.ly/HGDiscord. That's our Discord chat channel. Talk to us live and experience the mundanity that is our everyday normal thoughts that are not worthy of a podcast. But most importantly, help us claw our way into the podcasting firmament by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it! Or we'll explain the exact context of Skynet gives RoboCop a boner. And believe me, there is context.
Too much context.
The fact you explained it to me, I did not believe it, and then I saw it for myself. Until next week, keeping it real.